Hey, Eric. Hey, remember we're on a different video channel now because of the BCAL meeting. Can you hear me? There's no mic. Can you hear me at all?
How's that?
Much better.
There we go. So I guess I was talking in the BCAL meeting.
Was there anyone at the BCAL meeting?
No, I saw your desktop because I just saw the windows pop up on yours.
Okay.
So.
Let me go get my coffee while you're right back.
Yeah, take your time.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning, sir. How are you?
Doing well. How about you?
Good, good.
All right.
How's the haul coming along?
Actually, little by little, I mean, it's coming good. Got a lot of little things to take care of.
Right. So what happens when it's all done?
Then we have to continue maintaining everything.
Yeah, right.
Maintenance will be the... And then anything that's...
It works better if you have
not done. I saw the cup here. I thought you had a second cup. Is Verna going to be here?
I'm really hoping so. I'm pretty sure he got back into the country yesterday, but I haven't seen him, so I don't know if he's recuperating from jet lag and things like that. So I'm hoping he calls in. You know, there's a lot of things we got to get the ball moving on. Yeah, I want to talk about this whole light tightness thing again. I think this is a bigger issue than what we think it might have been earlier. So this is something that I think we're going to have to revisit again.
Okay. Is Werner back?
I was just telling Tim I haven't seen him yet. I'm pretty sure that he got back from country yesterday, so he may or may not be calling in. There he is right there.
We were just talking about you, Werner.
Hi.
Oh, Werner's back.
Okay. Welcome back.
Hey.
Do you just want to connect in your office?
Yeah. Well, let's get started then.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you want me to come with you?
No.
Okay, then I'll come to the office afterwards. Do you have a minute? Okay.
So he's going to run back to his office and connect quickly.
Okay.
Hey, Chuck.
Morning. Cold out there.
Yeah, the wind is howling.
I thought it was supposed to be warm. Obviously, I was wrong. I thought it was supposed to be a little warm.
No, tomorrow weekend's supposed to warm up.
That's right. You guys got snow this week, right?
Yeah, we had snow for third or fourth time, something this year. I lost count. much more than normal.
Usually once, maybe twice. Never five, four, five times.
Back out of the country?
Yeah. He'll be back in a month.
He'll be joining us in Switzerland.
Yeah, great. He'll
problem. Come back once we build the start counter and then.
Okay, well, let's look through this. All right, so there's Werner. Okay, so looking at last week's minutes, we talked about the problems. Jig is making progress. Support structure, inner sleeve is complete. Rosell came in, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, we'll probably talk about that in a day or two. And the staff shutdown discussion, nothing weird there. Okay, the Bruce Lenzer thing is on the agenda for today.
Hey, there it is.
And Werner. Yes. Coming from his very own iPad. Okay, and then the TDR, there was a draft, which Eric got out. Okay, so on the TDR, Eric, I made some comments and wrote them down, but... I haven't emailed them to you. We had an internet issue yesterday, and the internet was down for a good part of the afternoon, late morning and afternoon. So I forgot to pick up the file and actually send it to you. But I have some comments on that.
Okay. Yeah, I went ahead and already submitted the version that I sent out to everyone. I submitted that to the repository and updated it, so I can easily just make the changes and update it again. I just wanted to get it in before the collaboration meeting.
Sure.
That way, you know, I figured Mike was going to do an update about the TDR status of each group, so at least we'd have ours in and that sort of thing. So any minor changes can come in time. So if anyone ever wants to read it.
Werner, do you get a chance to look at that at all, the draft?
No, I wait during that time.
So that might get some changes in the future. All right, so back to today. Maybe we should talk about... out to Texas, to Elgin, to visit their site. Do you guys know about that already?
I know about it.
Okay. So he circulated a charge to this committee, which is Bruce, me, Werner, and Eric. And there's also a checklist, this quality checklist that he always has. And the charges, I don't know if we really need to look at it. So the story is he's been going out to Texas every so often regularly for personal business. And so he's not going to be too far away, and he volunteered to go out there. And he went through Glenn, you know, to propose this. And so so everyone thinks it's a good idea. Now, the only issue, I think, is getting a little late now, and I haven't been pushing it, but there's a couple people in the collaboration. You might have been there for the discussion. But there's a couple people in the collaboration that think that a physicist should go to back up Bruce on this on site. And that really wasn't in my plan, so I have not been pushing that. Eugene has heard those arguments, and he didn't push it. Glenn heard the argument. He didn't push it. But there are people pushing that a physicist go. So
who's up for Texas?
Who's up for Texas? Lone Star State. Boondoggle.
I didn't hear anybody raise their hand.
I hear crickets, right? Tumbleweed.
Well,
you hear
I mean, in one way, what we could do, I mean, Eric could go, since he's going to work most closely with the materials.
Well, it's starting to get kind of close in time. It's a three-hour meeting. I mean, the reason Bruce is going in the first place was, you know, because he's going to be quasi in the area. It's a two-hour drive, I think, or something for him. So he's going to be quasi. Texas is a big state,
yes,
after all. So he's going to be quasi in the area anyway, so it was kind of an opportunity. But I think the main thing is for him to go and have this agenda and send the message.
Really, that's what it's going to do. And it's clearly a QA issue, right? They were able to do it. It's not like a technology,
yeah,
you know, that they don't know. It's a QA. They were able to do it. Now they're not able to do it. There's something in the QA system, something in the procedure that changed, right? And that's what Bruce, that's right up his alley. That's what he does.
Okay, so the argument that's given is that oftentimes, you know, Bruce himself doesn't know some of the physics-type requirements, light collection and all that kind of thing, you know, that might come up during the meeting, and that it would benefit from having someone on the scientific side there with him. So,
but aren't we there in essence? I mean, you know, we're going to attend this. Elgin's going to give a quality assurance presentation. Chuck's. There's actually, if we read this, the checklist, that there's actually sort of two presentations that'll happen, and then there's sort of an after action review that we'll all be a part of as well, to kind of get an idea of what Bruce's findings are. So then any inquiry we have in regards to any physics aspects, I think that we could just answer that way. Now, I mean, as far as the way I saw the benefit coming from if one of us were to go would be that we would be able to see the tooling. And then if there's any sort of if there's any arguments that could be made about how to improve the tooling or something of that matter. But, I mean, even then you think that we could sort of sort that out just through the already video conference that we have planned.
Okay, I think I totally agree with that. I mean, that's been my attitude from the beginning, but I wanted to raise it from the group. So let's say that
we'll be there on video.
We'll be there video-wise. Not in person, then in voice. Okay.
Yeah, and if you remember, too, Bruce even said, you know, we could even FaceTime. If, say, for instance, there's an issue with the tooling or something, we could even just FaceTime with him with his iPad that he's going to bring, and that way we can sort of see the facility or see the tooling.
Right.
If it really comes down to something like that as well.
Actually, I have an iPad now. I've never done the FaceTime thing. Okay. All right, so let's go back to our normally scheduled program then. I'll just say that we thought we were covered, basically. Bruce can cover it, and we'll have remote. So counter construction status? Anything further at FIU, or are we just waiting for this thing to, for the new simulators?
Yeah, some new status. So actually, for once we have some good news. So Elgin shipped a prototype, one single prototype of a bent bar to McNeil. And I received word from Ibrahim, he's the quality assurance guy at McNeil, the same gentleman who informed us that the 50 were bad, said that everything was good to go, it fits in the fixture just fine, and they should be able to machine them, and he sees no problems with them. I've notified Elgin, and also I've put both Chuck Hurlbut and Ibrahim in contact with one another, so now that they can talk. So they have each other's line of communication open. So in all regards, that's some pretty good news, I think. So that means I haven't actually heard from Chuck. I sent an email asking if this means that production will begin in full force or not. So we'll just have to wait and see. But again, I think with the 4-week lead time, this is actually perfect timing. So that means I think that Bruce will probably get there about halfway when their production is about halfway complete, since they'll be there in 2 weeks. So I guess in that regard, as far as the paddles are concerned, that's some good news.
Is there any word about the visual quality of the plastic?
Ibrahim did not report on that. I can contact him and inquire. I mean, I'm assuming it's okay, considering, you know, he was the one who even noticed the bubbles in the bend region the first go around. I think he might have been, you know, hyper aware of that the second time around. But as far as the scratches and things go, I'd have to personally ask him whether he noticed any of these things.
Okay, that's really great news.
Yeah, I would assume not, because I think right now that Elgin is sort of on their best behavior, I would think. So I think, you know, they're also hyper aware of any potential defects. So you know, cross our fingers, sort of thing.
Okay. So, anything new on the test stand or the assembly jig?
No new progress on the assembly jig. The test stand, we've determined some slight modifications that need to be made in terms of testing. It's nothing major, just small, minor modifications. Those are being implemented by two of the undergraduate students that are working with me. So that work is ongoing. I did a high precision scan on one of the scintillators as far as what the alignment would be in the Y direction. So, or actually, what's the consequence of a misalignment? And those studies are still pending. So once I have those results, I'll have them for the next meeting. So that's a test that's ongoing. So that's pretty much it as far as the assembly jig and the test stand is going. And I guess furthermore, in terms of start counter projects, is I'm working on a Monte Carlo simulation right now to determine charge track intersections with sections of the start counter. So once we're able to determine what the intersection point along the path of the simulator of a charge track is, then we can go ahead and use that to allow us to do the time walk corrections and to do TDC mean corrector, which is basically time walk correction as well. So that those simulations are ongoing, and that's something that I've been working on for the past few weeks. So I think that's about it as far as progress is going. And then I guess I wanted to talk a little bit more about this what we discussed in the other meeting that we had last week with that Warner, but I think that's on the agenda, so we'll just get that and we'll get to that, I guess.
Yeah, that's the next item. Well, it's part of the next item. Why don't we just go to that? So we had a meeting, when was it, last week?
Yep.
Last conference. Turn the volume. Oh, yeah. Okay, so we had this meeting. We wanted to make sure that, so I guess I'll recap.
Sure.
the wrapping and imperfections kind of built up over the entire array, and it didn't fit into the structure as originally designed. There had to be some significant modifications to that. So Start Counter is also, you know, when you look at the time of flight, it kind of reminds you of the Start Counter if you squint hard enough. And so there's some similarity, and that problem might show up here. We thought we wanted to address that, look at that in detail again, you know, just make sure that we're okay on that point. And the other thing that's kind of worrying was that in the past we've always said that the wrapping is so thin that we don't even have to take account of it. And so the design kind of right now reflects that situation. But the wrapping situation, I think, has changed a little bit maybe since that discussion, and we just want to make sure that we have enough room to fit everything in there, and that when they do fit, they'll align with the side PMs properly. Counter individually in Tedlar, which would certainly add a lot that would have to be accounted for. We argued about whether that was really necessary or not, but the idea came up, and that would push us, I think, really to have to allow for some extra space for wrapping. So that's how I remember the conversation. Sorry?
Did we think that we would need to wrap them individually in Tedlar?
Well, you know, it's just kind of a...
He heard you say that, and he left.
He left.
Eric brought that up last week.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay, I couldn't tell. The video's been going in and out.
Yeah, I just also I basically missed your arm. So.
Okay, so yeah, I brought it up that whether or not we needed to consider to wrap each individual scintillator in Tedlar, or if we would just wrap the whole outside in Tedlar. The reason each individual paddle, it has to be wrapped in some material outside of the aluminum foil for light tightness, since we have ambient light in the hull. I mean, this is something that's typically done, at least for detector systems that have single photoelectron detection efficiency, which isn't something that we necessarily have. But this is something, once we're trying to finalize the dimensions of the Roha cell and the support structure and the hub and everything, that, you know, this is something where we actually have somewhat of a sizable increase in the circumference of the counter, or the Start Counter. So I was just trying to revisit this idea as to whether or not each individual one would actually be wrapped in Tedlar or not. And then if light tightness is something we actually need to worry about, then it's something that, you know, that we have to bring up an idea of how to design, or how we would wrap the whole counter on the outside. And then similarly, then how do we cover the area around where the side PM couples to the scintillator? Is this something that we just sort of kind of blanket it with the Tedlar around in some way. You know, this is just something that I hadn't necessarily completely thought through. I'm just sort of new, so I was just trying to bounce some ideas around, because we have to finalize this support structure soon. So that's how this all came about. So,
yeah, I wanted to avoid individually. I think the most critical part for light tightening will be the joint where the side PMs and the scintillators come together, and especially making sure that there is no light coming through the printed circuit board. From the other side, I wanted to really not individually wrap the scintillators in order to keep the space between the individual detectors as small as possible. So I really have almost no material there. And the only kind of reflective material you have there is really to prevent light leaking from one detector into the next. So that's why I thought the easiest one, or probably the best solution, would be to have the scintillator, the entire detector wrapped, to get it light tight. And I think that means we need to put something inside on the support to for light tightness, so this will be just a cone shaped out of Tedlar, and then put the Tedlar cover to the outside for light tightness, and then the tricky part is to, you know, basically tape it down around the side PMs to avoid light from the outside getting in there. That is how I see it.
Okay, so the question is, I think we probably want to put in some nominal thickness of whatever it is that goes in between the counters, and also if we wrap the inner row cell with Tedlar, that will also add thickness.
Mm-hmm.
The point is that if you don't allow for enough, then that basically pushes the ring of scintillator outwards.
Yeah.
Okay. And then as you, both on the inner diameter and also in between, they both go the same way. And then as we move out, we worry about the alignment with the side PMs. Now, if we allow for too much space in both these dimensions, then the scintillators could possibly collapse to a smaller radius than we planned. But we can deal with that with shims on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and is there a maximum shim that we can lift? You know, I don't want to just throw an a piece of paper or something in there. Is, would two thicknesses double that be okay, or is that a problem?
No, it's not a problem necessarily. I mean, of course, you want it to be as tight as possible. I mean, you know. So you want a tolerance that you think you can make, and you don't want more than that. You want something that we really think we can make.
So that depends on the wrapping.
And that depends on the wrapping. And it depends on how any layers
that
are put on.
It depends also on the manufacturing tolerances of the scintillators, I think.
And the man.
Yep.
Absolutely, it does.
Because if they do something, if we assume, let's say, 200 microns, and 200 micron out of, what is that, 15 millimeters roughly. That would be a little bit more than 1%. So, and if you take now, and that translates directly into the diameter, and the diameter being about, what, about 140 millimeters, right?
Mm.
The inner diameter, or whatever it is, the 1% there translates right away into 1.5 millimeters.
Right.
Yep, that's
so
where
the
concern
lies.
And the active area of the side PM is 3 millimeters, so that counts.
So, a lot. Yeah. So, which means basically, we need to find a way of having the flexibility of getting the scintillators, you know, radially at the position where the side PMs are.
Right.
And that can only
that
be
might
done
even
in
be necessary on the paddle by paddle layer to adjust the height, right?
Yeah, that's fine. But that means that you might have, we're going to accept some kind of gap between the scintillators as well.
Right.
Well, at the end, yes.
Which is life, of course.
Yeah, I mean,
the scintillator drawing reflects no space in between at this point.
Yeah.
Right. So the drawing reflects no space. The placement of the side PMs on the ring is nominally affected by this consideration.
Yeah. Right.
But we
bring that out.
Half a millimeter or something, we do that.
And we have the flexibility now, especially since, We just can't make the thing smaller. I mean, we just can't move the side PMs out to meet the scintillator. That can't be done. Once we put those in, then we fix the thing, and the wrapping has to be accommodate that position of the scintillator. Well, we need a number.
So.
Well, we can estimate it right now. The aluminum foil we are using is how thick? I think
16.5 micron.
16.5 microns. So
and we know
in both sums, so times two, that makes 30 microns, let's say 40 microns is the space that we will have in any case when they are close together.
And you have to take in, as you said, the machining tolerance. You have to assume they're going to all be maximum. I mean, we didn't do that on a time of flight, and we got bit by that because they apparently were all on the high side, so they all added up. They didn't average out. So
and
I guess
we know
once they had a...
From the five prototypes that we had, we measured them to within 100 plus or minus 400 micron within spec and in all dimensions.
All plus or minus, so 400. So, I mean, so if they're all... If they all turn out to be 400 microns wider, you know, or 200 microns wider or whatever in that range, then you, that is all going to add up, and that's going to force the ring to be a bigger diameter, right? So that's what we got to, that's the case we, I think we really got to look at.
Now, the question is that we might want to think, is there a possibility to allow for, let's say, a half a millimeter radial adjustment when mounting the side cams to the ring?
So what we need to check is, I guess the electronic board's already made and everything, right? So we got to check and see what the, I mean, if they have a big, we have a screw that goes through there, if the hole has big enough clearance in it to do that, and things are nominal, so we got to check that. So, I mean, if you have a hole that's a millimeter oversized, well, that gives you some play on that, and I'm not sure. We've got to check that, but that is definitely something to check because that gives you some play. You know, whether it's 20 microns or.
I mean, so if you moved it out, we have three paddles per section, right? So if you move it out, it kind of changes these two over here a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's right. But, yeah, if you can, I mean, in the end, you want the side PMs lined up with the scintillator, right? And you don't want too much of a gap, whatever that number is, between the scintillators. I mean, these are all restraints, constraints that we want to put on there. So we've got to figure out the best way. So we do need to find out the electronic boards, the tolerances on them, what the hole size is, and what, how much we got to play in there. That'll definitely come into play.
Can you slot the aluminum?
Well, it's threaded in. The screws get threaded into the aluminum. So you can't slot them. Otherwise, I would slot them. But they thread right into there because that's what they attach to, right?
Yeah.
And but we did.
There's other ways you can do it. You can put floating nuts on the far side. Not much, but it's very small space. It's not.
What are you saying?
I was going to say they had to open it. They opened up a couple of the bores on electronic boards for the paraspectrometer, a couple thousand, so it wasn't a problem. So. Down to it and need a little more space on that.
Okay, so we have to check with Fernando.
Yeah.
Size of this
hole.
Yes. I mean, the critical part would be if you put the scintillators all together, right, and now the ring is, let's say, if we cannot align them then with the IPMs, because the IPMs make even a smaller ring, that would be really a problem, right? Then we could never align them. If the ring of the IPMs is slightly larger than the scintillators, then we would have to just basically, you know, open it up a little bit and in just take into account that we will get some gaps into the coverage. But at least we could still align them.
That's right.
That's correct.
And that would be the approach that I would take, would be to make our foam mandrel slightly smaller, but at the same time, on the ring, make the screw hole, bring the screw holes out of, you know, half a millimeter, whatever the number is, or a millimeter or half a millimeter to say nominally we're going to shim the scintillators out to meet that, or if things just happen to stack up, then it might be okay and you don't have to shim it, but you never have to get smaller, right?
Yeah, yeah, because you cannot make it smaller if they stick together.
Yep.
Right. I mean, you could go back in and machine the foam mandrel. After everything's fit checked, you can pull it back out and machine that back down.
Yeah.
But that's an extra step that, you know, you may not want to do.
Yes. No, I'm more worried what happens if you put everything together and your ring of IPMs like this, where then the scintillator stick to it. The ring is smaller than the scintillator when they all touch each other. Right? That's the problem. That would be bad.
Right. It's all going to depend on the scintillator size.
That's right.
So we have to assume the scintillator size is going to be at the maximum, and we probably need to move the electronic boards out to match that. I think that's
Is there a way that one could go, that we could say, could we delay something till we have the scintillators? Because then we can put them in a ring and see what is really the dimension, the ultimate dimension.
Yeah, I think, I don't know that we want to delay.
Yeah.
Because that could be, you know, it could be 4 weeks, as they say. It could be 2 months from now, 3 months from now. You know, I don't know how things are going to go. And then us machine another month, turn around, and, you know, you might not get the mandrel until July, June or July, and then that's getting to be too late. You know, if things don't go swimmingly.
Could we have a blank aluminum ring and the foam all glued together and just not drill the holes for the boards yet and have that as the last process? So then you know where the scintillators are. We can.
I mean, that is a possibility.
Do that after the fact to work with what actual.
I could also potentially ship prototypes down, just to play with while they're at JLab.
You mean the five prototypes that were made?
Yeah, I could ship some prototypes up and then either come up and play around with you guys, or you guys can take a look at them, or whatever the case may be.
Well, one thing is that Fernando, with respect to Chuck's comment, Fernando said that he wants the ring at some point in a couple weeks or something. He's ready.
He wants to mount the electronics to it and make sure there's no issues, right? So
I think
that's
so.
Why he wants the ring.
Okay.
I think we can make basically a decision based on, okay, so we know these will all be machined within a tolerance, but assuming they're on the high end, and then we look at the worst place gap, worst case gap is between them. Does it turn out to be 400 microns? If they all are machined under or whatever and not over, then you have a 400 micron gap. Is that a non-starter? I mean, if that's a non-starter, then we're going to have to take an iterative approach to this.
Yeah, the 400 micron out. Just trying to estimate it. The difference is, of course, that the critical part will be actually not where the scintillators are wide, but the tricky part is where the scintillators are very narrow, because right then you have, I forgot what it is, down to 3 millimeters or 4 millimeters, then 400 micron are like 10%, right? While if you have like a 150 or 15 millimeters, then for half a micron, it's only about 3%, which is probably not that bad. I think that's a little bit the issue.
It's 400, yeah. Can we go back to the 400 microns? Is it really that? Is really that the tolerance that we're accepting on those things?
That was the worst that I saw. That was sort of the maximal width of the scintillator that was machined out of spec. That was the maximal. Some were under, some were over. Most on average were about 200-ish micron from exact spec. And I mean, we've talked about this before, and we determined that, you know, 200 micron plus or minus from spec was okay.
Yeah.
You know, even upwards of 300 is still relatively okay.
So I think we should have some kind of a model okay, of where the errors come in and what the contribution. In other words, have a list of possible errors: manufacturing, wrapping, non-flatness of wrapping, you know, kind of thing.
Well, if you're not wrapping and you're just putting a sliver between it, then that.
Yeah, but if you're actually, you know, going around the corner with a piece of material,
which I don't think they are. Which is burnt.
The aluminum goes all the way around, right? 360 degrees around the entire.
Well, the tricky part is in the bend ridge, and that is where you always have some overlap, right?
Yep.
Okay, so there's going to be some crinkling, okay, and that adds, so then in that case, the thickness of the aluminum itself may not be the controlling number, but we need some kind of model of where these things can come from and how they affect it, and then we'll. I think we just give ourselves some reasonable tolerance there and build this sucker.
Okay, so what I'm.
I don't know.
But Chuck will. I'm volunteering, Chuck.
Okay.
we'll lay up each component. He'll make a sketch or whatever of each component and the tolerances, the possible tolerances on each component. And we'll propose a possible solution, and then we'll look at that in the next couple of days, I guess early next week.
Okay.
Cool.
Which we want to take.
I mean, maybe you guys should think about it, too. Come up with a number, and then we can...
No, what we could do, we could actually measure it. I mean, we have wrapped insulators. We can take a micrometer and just measure it along the edge, then you see what the variations are.
Oh, and there's a little something extra besides just measuring the width, because if these are somewhat stiff in that direction and you have a high point in one area, you know, it may just measuring the width won't account for that, right? Because then it'll touch the next scintillator in that area. So there's a little more added than just the width. It's the shape also, right?
Yeah.
I'm thinking between the scintillators, the worst part is what Werner mentioned, the bend region.
Yeah.
Okay, in the bend region, you might have some crinkles.
Well, that's
or
the worst for the wrapping, but not necessarily worse for the machining or.
Right.
I mean, it depends how it's held. I don't know exactly how to holding it, machining. I mean, you would figure machining would be pretty consistent, but.
Right. I mean, we can probably also modify the wrapping such that we have no overlap there, and. You know, because I don't think even if we have slight gaps, the light leaking from one into the other scintillator, I cannot imagine that really has any effect since we are anyway fighting for light, right?
Yes. Yeah, I agree.
So that's the thing we could try to do, to change the shape of the cuts that have to be made there in such a way that there is really no aluminum overlap in the bend region.
Yeah,
so that way you can be as certain as possible that you have a nice smooth aluminum surface sideways.
Yep, we can go into cloth wrapping, and they do darts and all this stuff too in the pattern to make sure there's no overlap. Yeah.
That can be done. And then what we shouldn't forget also, I mean, the order of 50 scintillators, we only need 30. So if we go through sorting, we might also not just use their optical properties, but also their geometrical shape and, you know, for fitting together. That's a criteria.
Yeah, I mean, you may end up in a situation where you want to grab all the big ones because they tend to be too small. Well, okay, that sounds almost like a plan of action. Is that a plan of action?
So, yeah, I think we need to do a tolerance study, like I said, and Chuck can lay out each tolerance for everything that applies to it, and we can make some decision early next week on what would be an allowable gap, you know, what the potential for the gap would be, and then we might have to compromise in the end and take a chance possibly, but I don't want to assume everything is nominal.
I mean, you know, if we fuck up and we're just a little bit off, that would be horrible.
And you know, it might be a combination. It might be a combination of things. You know, Chuck's going to check on the electronics boards too, and the size of the hole and the location of them, and if they are oversized enough, or can we oversize them a little more to give us some more slop? You know, so things like that can.
So given that this is such, this is a very squishy problem, right? It doesn't have real super hard edges. So I think more information in this case is good. So if you go ahead and do those measurements, I think that'd be fantastic. You know, just to.
The wrapped measurements, yeah.
Yeah, just to.
It'll give us another piece of information.
Just another piece of information in a uncertain situation always kind of helps. Not that, you know what I'm saying.
They do have hammers down
there. Hammers. Make it fit.
Actually, you know, you got whittling knives, right?
Yeah.
Miami. Maracas. No, I don't know. Okay. Is that a doable thing?
Yeah. We've got to get our kind of limits set and then say where we want to go from there. You know?
Okay. Geometry thing. Electronics. Okay, so I wrote to Fernando yesterday. He says that we will start a final round of electronics. We will start a final round of tests next week. We're also waiting for the aluminum ring to get fit the boards. Maybe he means test fit the boards. I don't know.
Yeah, he wants to test fit the boards. That's what he said. But we want to find out what the boards are to make our ring match it.
Yes, it would be nice to know when for the ring, as we will need it in 2 weeks. You know, it's Fernando talk.
That's what normal Fernando. Normal Fernando stuff.
But, you know. Okay, so that's the electronics report. We did the visit to Elgin. Do that, or
if we decide to go.
Yeah, if we go oversized, then if we know what we're doing, we're gonna have to shim.
Right.
If we know what we're doing.
The maximum shim that we look.
Yeah, well, no. How? I mean, exactly how to do it. I just put pieces of paper. Maybe it's not an issue.
Ted Lara.
I have a question. Do you know how thin can you get the sheets of Rohafel?
I'm thinking eighth inch on that spec.
Yeah, not like 10,000.
I think it's like, three millimeters or something like that, yeah. Pretty big.
So that's really, really thick in Oldsburg.
Yeah, well, that would be nice because it's low density.
Yeah, I was thinking if one could cut it and make shims out of Rohafel.
Yeah,
you have
not a bad idea. But we could, I mean, you could machine, you know, you could machine some sheets down. I don't know how it'll be handleable. Yeah, I don't know. I haven't dealt with Rohafel that thin, so I don't know if it'll, you pick it up and it snaps or whatever, you know. Not sure. I never used anything thinner than a few millimeters. And
you can get the machine shop to see what the finish thing
is. We could get our machine shop to machine a piece down and just see what it, you know, if we get
a
millimeter or a half millimeter. Yeah. Half millimeter is probably pushing it.
It's maybe. Like Richard.
I think half a millimeter would be the right shim size or something like that, right?
Yeah, half a millimeter. I mean, if you could do that, the cut with a knife, right? Almost.
You could do a hot. I mean, you could do a hot wire cut or something like that. Yeah, you can cut the shape. I mean, if you have a sheet of it, you can just cut the shapes what you need because it doesn't have to be 100% perfect.
No, in a way, because you know the scintillators are pretty flexible. The critical part is close to the detectors. To the tight end, we have to align this.
Right.
So we could probably just have a relatively narrow strip. So even if you have a thick, if you have a piece of half inch, what's it called? Half inch Rohafel, and you could cut it like really, really thin with a knife, you could cut very thin strips that you use then as shims, for instance.
Right, I see what you're saying. Yeah, I mean, you can customize it, right. So if the rest of it isn't Right. You just want to bring the ends in to line up.
Bring the ends to the right height.
The rest of it, who cares?
Exactly.
To a certain degree, obviously.
Yeah.
Oh, and, you know, that's a possibility, too. I think, but in the end, it's still going to come down to what will be an acceptable gap between them at the, you know, at any location. And so I think it's going to come down to that, because we can surely make the rows so big that you're, and, you know, that's pretty precise. And when you lay the scintillator on there, you know where that edge is, and you can line up, you can design it so you can line up the IPMs with that. You can do all that. But you, if you do that nominally, you obviously have to make the ROSA a little bigger, and you got a gap between the scintillators.
I think it goes. We put in a gap which is big enough that we're comfortable we can build it, and then we build it to that.
A 2-sigma gap.
Well, yeah, something like that. So that we say, okay, this we think we got a great chance that this will be built,
right?
And we go for it, you know.
Well,
and then you know, that's not the size of the gap is in that approach. The size of the gap is what the size of the gap is.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
it's not something that's over tolerance or under tolerance. It's buildability that's setting the size of the gap.
Well, and the gap could be, in reality, in the end, it could be zero or it could be as big as whatever, several hundred microns.
Yeah.
Because in the time of flight, for instance, it adds up to about 200 microns per.
Which gap are you talking about?
Between the scintillators. If you got the scintillators coming around like that. Talking about that, to make it manufactured and we can guarantee that will line up with the IPMs.
The gap in azimuth.
But you see, you can have really, you want the gap as zero as possible in the cone and the bend section. If you have a gap that slowly opens towards the IPM, which is anyway for particles at angles of like 130 or 20 degrees, I think that is much less critical. When we want the detector really, really tight, it's around, it's in the forward direction.
So
let's say cone and the, you know, some of the straight section.
So if you take that approach, you machine the ROSL too small, and then you shim the ends up at this IPMs to make them fit in the future. But, and then that way, you might have to shim the whole thing in order to get it fit snug to the ROSL, but then you plan on shimming. And then you'd have to plan on it. I mean, if we can get our half millimeter thick shims and everybody's happy with that, that could be a way to go.
But you still have the problem of the scintillators being able to collapse down close enough.
No, you set them because the ends you've already said, okay, we can accept the gap.
Oh.
So at the end you set the gap, but then as you go further down, you squeeze it, you shim less or whatever, and you squeeze it down so they're together. I mean, I if they're flexible and I haven't handled them, but if they're flexible enough to do that, then that's doable. It's a custom job as you'll do it as you're laying it up, but it's doable. We have a plan.
I mean, you cannot shim them too much because the electronics is always three in a row, right?
Well, right, but you said it right. So it doesn't. The electronics don't cover the whole width of the scintillator, right?
Yeah.
The IPM don't. It covers 70% of it, or whatever the number is.
The gap counts more. The gap counts more. In the front and in the back. He's absolutely right about that.
So I mean, we could design, if we design it to be shimmed as required. You just put it together down there. You're going to have to play around with it and get it shimmed properly to make everything line up.
So you're almost designing in a little bit of a flare in the
right, and then you can squeeze the tip together till they touch, and then shim it to that point.
I wonder if we can have Elgin put that bend in there. Oh, never mind. He laughed.
I knew he was going to laugh.
You don't even need to do that necessarily. This row, so you could just take some tape.
Right, he's looking for something as low density as possible, right?
Yeah.
As possible.
That's
the row cells lower.
That's a really good point. That's a really good point. I hate the idea, but if you take that attitude, then you can go ahead and move the IPM
you move them out to where you think the worst possible case is that they're going to wind up.
Right.
You move them out there, and then you still keep the ROA cell down to the nominal.
Right.
And then you shim to meet. You shim to fit. I mean,
that's good.
Sounds unscientific, but it's
Yeah.
Maybe you have to shim only the last two centimeters.
And that might be possible. Yes, it might be possible. You only have to shim the end. You might have to shim the whole thing.
It doesn't require some additional ROA cell because you know it's so far upstream where nobody really.
You can put anything you want there.
Right.
But there's a chance even at the tip you will have to shim because if they're wider at the tip, then you're just going to have a gap between the ROA cell and when these things come together. You don't want a gap. You want it to be snug on there, right? So it doesn't move around.
As long as it doesn't move.
Yeah. So, I mean, it doesn't have to be a solid shim, but you can shim. So it...
That's a really good point. It's interesting.
Yeah.
That may give us a little more wiggle room, though.
That'll give us more wiggle room, I think. And if we get really lucky... Wow, you didn't have to shim. Everything was perfect.
Yeah. If you get lucky,
we get really lucky.
If you get really lucky, we pick all the hugest thin layers we can find in the batch.
Actually, we'd have to design it so we know at the... I mean, that would be the design. We're going to shim here. And then the rest of it will play by ear, whether you need to or not, to close the gap.
Would you think of actually tapering?
No, I think of just undersizing the whole thing. Well, not massively undersized, but put it at the nominal.
Yeah.
Put it at the nominal location. And then if you have oversized paddles that bring you out further, then you have to shim to meet to meet it. But at the end, we know we're going to have to shim. But at the rest of it, if the paddles are you know, not nominal and not oversized, then you may not need to shim.
Okay, so I guess we have to think about this a bit. I'm not going to make a decision here, are we?
I think we still need to do the exercise of get all the measurements, because that's in the end it's going to determine the size of what and all the things we're going to do. Look at the electronics board. Look at the tolerance stack up on. ROA cell, the aluminum ring, and where the holes go. Look at all the possible tolerances, and we can make a decision. Okay, you know, we're gonna put a 1 millimeter gap nominally at the root end, you know, whatever the decision comes out to be, and the rest we'll see if we need to put the gap or not.
So how do you want to proceed? Do you want to have another meeting? Or
well, I think once
we'll
start with the emailing out,
okay.
And if we need to discuss it, we'll FaceTime or something.
Okay.
Mark's got an idea.
I mean, look, we need wiggle room, otherwise you can't be guaranteed that thing doesn't fit together.
That's right. We found that out the hard way on the time of flight. So.
All right, good. I think that's it for today then. Anything else, you guys?
Yeah. Any? Well, does the company still have these damaged simulators? Does Elstrom have them?
Yes.
Yeah, I think so.
Sure.
They're not machined.
They're not machined.
No, they couldn't even, they were so deformed, they couldn't fit it really in their mounting seat.
So, that, you know, they're like this also, you know.
Okay.
And they couldn't fit in the holding fixture, yeah. Twisted, they were all, all funked out.
Okay. All right, good. Then I think we're done then. We're adjourned.
But thanks. I think that approach... sounds reasonable. Though.
Okay.
Maybe have to count on a shim.
So I need to find out what the finished shim we can find.
Yeah. I mean, we should with anything, though. I mean, I don't think that...
At the root
we
end,
should think about it.
At the root end, you
go
don't
ahead,
really...
Go ahead, find that out. Yes, find that out. Find
at
that
the
out.
Root end, you don't really care, but at the tip, if you have to shim, you want to use ROA cell, I think. You know.
Yeah.
Actually, we can get that great stuff, that spray foam, expanding foam. Okay, maybe not. Yeah,
okay.
The tip of the thing goes like this.
Okay, so I think we're done. I'm going to hang up on FIU right now.
All right, thanks, guys.
Bye.
All right, bye. Welcome back, Bruno.
Yeah, welcome back.
Yeah, so I think that's probably the approach we're going to take, but let's get numbers. We're at, and we'll make a decision. Okay, this is going to be the size of ROA cell. We know we're going to have to shim the root end. The rest is maybe. And what size ROA cell? I think that's the approach we got to take.
Yeah, we don't want to shim it at a taper.
No.
Anything crazy.
No, I don't think so. Well, we don't know what it's going to be, so I don't think
I mean, machine. Did I say shim?
Yeah, I know machine. Machine, yeah. He was out of the country. I'm not sure where he was.
I don't know. I don't know. He's in the airport.
He's from Boston. He's supposed to be in Boston. Monday morning at 4 o'clock.
This month?
This month. It's Carnival.
Okay.
Big Carnival. It's very big. Well, you have two kinds of people in Boston. The ones who hate it and they leave.
And the ones who do.
The ones that